Hi, wherever you may be around the world, and thank you for joining us once again on truth2u.org. That's truth2u.org. G'day, Jason.
G'day. Hello, everybody at home.
Hello, everybody at home, or in your car, or at work. I know you shouldn't be listening to this while you're at work, but hey, why not?
We've been away for a couple of weeks due to the Easter break, now we're back.
Is it due to the Easter break, or is it due to Pesach?
No, it's the Easter break.
To be honest, we've been... okay, so what happens is, every 6 months, for 6 months of the year, we're 2 hours further apart, and then for the other 6 months, we're 2 hours closer. And it's that 6 months that we seem to always get to catch up and chat all the time. Makes all the difference in the world, and do a whole lot more recordings. And we're there now. We've finally made it, except that I've got to go in about half an hour. But that's all right. Yeah. We can accomplish a lot in that time.
We can. We're on the light side of the moon at the moment.
Right.
That's
what it is.
So while we are talking about planets...
Were we?
They said the light side of the moon. I was trying to make a...
that's a moon.
A segue.
It's a satellite.
So we have a secret group, right? You can't find it. You'll never find it. It's hidden. And we froze
stuff in. It's actually a secret society. It's a secret society with a secret handshake made up of only Jason and myself.
Mm. Yeah. And the handshake changes every time just to keep us on our toes.
That's right. we've never actually used it because you're in Ireland and I'm in Australia, but it does exist. Yeah.
So in this secret society, we put up these stories that we find interesting. And one of the ones that Johnny put up a while ago was the incredible prophetic significance of Prince William visiting Israel this year.
Yeah, what's that about? So I had a quick look at that. I mean, I put these things up, but I didn't actually read it. Was it interesting?
It was it was incredible that someone actually titled it that when there was very little prophetic significance in the story.
I know, so I started reading it and it said, oh yeah, because, you know, this is the 70th anniversary of the rebirth of Israel. And, you know, of course, it just happened to be that... Israel was in exile in Babylon for 70 years, therefore prophetic. And then it just went on.
Therefore, 70 is an important number because of that.
Yeah, and then it went on with the history of the absence of the royal family and the vague connections with the royal family and Israel, which was interesting. It was really just more history than prophecy, I thought.
That was the only interesting part for me, because I kind of already knew. Now, I have to say now, I'm a royalist.
Mm.
I stand for the Queen. I think they do an amazing job.
Is there a painting of the Queen on your wall?
There's not one on my wall, but we do have some china with the Queen's face on it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah,
and Lynn, weirdly, Lynn's Irish. Lynn's full on Irish. She loves the royal family. That is not an Irish normal kind of perspective to have. Not a position that an Irish person normally have, especially in the South.
But she's a big fan. She's a
huge fan.
Yes.
But one of the cool stories that popped up from this is that, so the Queen is married to Prince Philip, and Prince Philip's family are Greek. His parents were King George I and Princess Anne. And during Prince George's reign, a Jewish man once helped out King George of Greece, and in return, King George said, if ever you get into any trouble or you need anything at all, you come to me and I'll fix it for you.
Nice.
So his wife, who was then a widow, Rachel Cohen, and her five children go rat-a-tat on the door of Princess Anne and say, remember me? My husband helped your husband. And she hid them during the war. She hid this Jewish family during the war.
Yeah.
And now they have, the princess herself, Princess Anne, she's buried in the graveyard in the Garden of Olives.
Mm-hmm.
And her picture, Princess Anne's picture, is up in Yad Vashem, Righteous Among Nations. And I thought that was kind of a cool story.
That is a cool story.
So recent history with the Queen visiting Israel, that there hasn't been a visit.
No.
There's been a few other...
Chucky's been there a couple of times, but not officially. Yeah.
Not officially.
Yeah.
So this will be an interesting visit.
Yeah.
Because
this is an official visit. This is the first official visit.
That's right. Yeah, with the families. And as an English person, but as a pro-Israel person, I can see both sides of why she herself hasn't been. But I don't think for a minute it was her choice, because she's a hugely strong Christian. And I think given the opportunity to go to those kind, to do the tour, of Mount of Olives and the birth, you know, the suspected birthplace and all the other things she could have done, she'd definitely have done it by now.
Yeah, okay.
But so hugely, politics, I think, way.
Hugely strong Christian, you say. So I heard, and I didn't read this article, but I heard that Prince Harry and his fiancée, wife-to-be, didn't go to the Easter morning service. Tisk, tisk, tisk.
Yeah, the grandchildren are not walking in the way of the grandparents.
Oh, dear.
Which is as much of a way. But anyway, thought that was kind of an interesting story that we snipped at that. Interestingly, the website's called Charisma News. Hmm. It seems to be a very spiritually driven Christian magazine. And that gets quite interesting at the bottom when they speak about the history of Israel and how countries haven't or have supported them. Okay. And so it's worth looking over if you just want to see how stories can be portrayed in different ways.
All right, okay. Now, yeah. Now we did, as I mentioned, we've passed. Thank goodness, we're past the Easter thing. We're still in Pesach, which is great for us. And but you put something on our secret group, and this one's from ChristianHeadlines.com. Facebook rejects ad depicting crucifixion of Christ. I thought others would be interesting. Do tell.
So it's an interesting story. Facebook's been in the press a lot lately because of their data retention and Facebook's kind of taking the brunt for some information that's been sold and shared about, you know, something like 87 million people. It's crazy. But this particular story, there was a theological seminary school that wanted to have, it was the Franciscan University, and they wanted to put a picture up promoting their theology programs. Right. And the picture was Jesus on the cross, very traditional looking crucifixion. Mm-hmm. But obviously he'd been whipped and lashed, and there was blood and guts and gore. Facebook said it was shocking, sensational, and excessively violent, and that it couldn't be shown.
Now, what do you think? What do you think about that?
I think if I had a butchery program and I was going to show people how to correctly butcher animals, and I showed that on a picture, it would not have got up there. So why should they allow a picture of a guy on a cross?
Totally agree. I absolutely agree with you, because it is, when you really, you know, look at the theology of Christianity, it is horribly gory, and everything's about blood, and it's graphic, and it's morbid. It's a very morbid religion. And I'm glad, actually, that Facebook said, you know what, this is kind of, you know, think about it. We've had all the ISIS, all the beheadings and all this terrible stuff that's been recorded, been on YouTube, it's taken down, we have to take down all the stuff they put on Facebook. And then you want to, put up a picture of some guy hanging from a cross with a crown of thorns being whipped and blah, 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 blah. I totally agree. I don't think children should be seeing this kind of thing.
No. And you should have a right to refuse. I mean, I go onto Facebook and you are forced to see a lot of things you don't want to see just in your newsfeed. But ads aren't one of those things. So I could go through and reject people in my newsfeed. So I could say I don't want to see that stuff anymore and I won't see them anymore. But an ad's not that way. And I don't think – and also the headline of this article on Christian Headlines, Facebook rejects ad depicting crucifixion of Christ. That's kind of – it comes from the perspective that you already believe is Christ. And I think that had I written a story about the other 99,999 Jews that were crucified in that period of time, and I had like a silhouette of some people on crosses, that would have been fine. They would have let that go. But because they were tuning in on one person, and, it's not right. Yeah. They won't allow lots of things on Facebook. I mean, even if they're even slightly gory. So why would they allow the physical death of a person? And again, if you don't have a clue, if you're 11 years old, 8 or 5, you're scrolling through and you see that.
Yeah.
And especially if you're not Christian, if that's an unfamiliar picture to you,
it's going to really horrify you.
Yeah, it really, really does. So it's an interesting thing. And I'm glad that, because Facebook they drop the ball on a lot of things. So does Twitter, but they were on it for this.
Yeah. I think they've done well.
Good. Sensational and shocking, they called
Sensational
it.
Sensational and shocking.
Yeah. And they responded with, he was despised and rejected of men, which must have only made them feel better about themselves when Facebook said no. Proving a point, Facebook. Proving Isaiah 53 is true.
That's it.
Can I just say as well, if you're listening to this, he wasn't killed on a cross. It's bothered me. It still bothers me. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of information. You can go and look it up yourself. The Greek for the cross is crux, and it's a stake. He was killed on a stake.
If anything,
it was a T, but it certainly wasn't a full-on crucifixion cross like we see depicted. That was a much later invention. That didn't happen then. It would have been too expensive. It's way too much wood. Look that up. It's very easy. Vine's Dictionary has that, and it's very easy to seek out.
Speaking of cuts of meat, like T-bone steak. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Ross and I on Israel on My Mind on Israel News Talk Radio, we had to talk about, it was the talk of the town, the rabbi that said, and this was reported in the Times of Israel, that lab-grown pork could be kosher for Jews to eat. Now, you and I have spoken about this before. Meat that is grown in laboratory, so-called clean meat, they call it, because, of course, we already have a biblical definition for clean meat, but let's, have another one. Meat that is grown cultured in a laboratory, a particular rabbi said, can be pork grown in a laboratory. We can eat. Not only would that be kosher for Jews to eat, but you can have it with milk, have a cheeseburger, finally. I'm not doing that. Ross isn't doing that. We both agreed, no. But what I thought was really interesting was Richard Dawkins, who decided to take that just a little bit further, and he said, what about human meat? Shouldn't we then overcome our taboo against cannibalism? What about human meat grown in a laboratory, cultured human meat? Your thoughts?
I think that seems interesting that he went that way. I mean, he said he'd like to try it. I don't know why he draws a difference between cultured human meat and human meat. So someone rolls up and he says, look, I'm going to get euthanized tomorrow. I'm not happy with my illness. I have myself killed. I'm going off to Sweden. Then after that, my body's yours. You can eat it. Why is that not okay? People have done that, believe me. It's crazy.
Yeah.
why is that not okay for him to eat? Why is he only happy if it's...
No, because what he's saying... So you mean Richard?
Yeah.
Do you reckon he was called Dick Dork at school?
Might have been a Dick Dork.
Dick Dork. That would have been the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah.
Dick Dork. I reckon that what Dick Dork's saying, I think it's quite clever because if the rabbi can say that swine flesh grown in a laboratory because it didn't actually come, it's not slicing it off a pig, though the cells were derived from or extracted from swine, what he's saying, I totally disagree with the rabbi, incidentally, but the rabbi's saying we can eat that if it's cultured in a laboratory. We can eat it. More so, we can even have it with dairy because, of course, the Orthodox say that you can't have meat and milk together. Mm. Now, Dick Dork has said, well, if we can do that, then why not if we extract human cells and grow that, culture that in a laboratory and make a little burger patty out of human meat, if it's good enough for the pig, why not good enough for human meat?
Mm. No, I agree. I agree with his consensus. If it's good enough for one, why shouldn't we have it for ourselves?
Now, what I want to find out is, would this rabbi agree with Dick Dork and say, yes, we can have that too and have that with a slice of cheese?
At that stage, it should be anything, right? I mean, you can go to certain parts of Asia and you won't be allowed to eat beef. You can go to certain parts of Asia and they won't. Then you'll be offered dog or cat or any number of things.
Or possum or whatever, or wombat.
Food is changes depending on where you are in the world.
So do you know what it's going to come down to? Yeah. It's going to come down to which meat is fastest to grow, has the most nutrition and flavor. It doesn't matter what it is, they'll have some sort of there'll be some sort of laboratory meat and maybe it is human meat. Who knows? It might turn out to be human meat, or it might be spiders, or it might be, who knows what, a lizard, I don't know.
Or a mix of different types of meat.
Might be a mix of a few different things. I'm not eating any of it. I don't think anyone should, but here's the other question. If someone is going, if there is a pig eater, and they go, you know what, I'm going to eat pork. I just like it, and I don't care about what the Torah says. But if you grow it in a laboratory, I'll have that instead. Well, then I would encourage that person to take it from the laboratory. Because at least then you're not farming the like mass produced like pig farms, horrible places. Oh my goodness,
yeah,
it's not right.
Mm.
Yeah. Thoughts?
Well, that's one of the bigger questions, isn't it? You have to ask: does the Torah say you shouldn't eat the meat of these unclean animals because of the animals themselves, or is it the product of the animal? If it's the product of the animal, if it's the meat of the animal, then this cultured meat is the problem. It's not the life that you're taking, or the skin, or any other number of things, like a rabbit. What is it about the rabbit that makes it unclean to eat? Hmm. Is it that it hops around? Is it the way it eats its food? Or is it the actual flesh of the animal? What differentiates that? And if it is the meat itself, then regardless of where you get that from, it's still rabbit meat.
Yeah.
It might have been rabbit meat from 150 years ago that they've kept going, like some kefir. But it's still bad. And that's the question that has to be answered. I think
it's a really good question, but of course there is no answer given to that in the Torah. Like the Torah just says you can eat these, you can't eat these. There's a bunch of different analogies and reasons, speculations as to why we're allowed to eat X and not Y. It goes further than that in the Torah because there's four things that we're not even allowed to touch the carcass of, and that includes the hare, the shafan, the camel, and the pig. So I would say to this rabbi, no, you've totally got it wrong. I'm not touching that. And I would say to Dick Dork, I'm not eating human flesh. But if he wants to, I don't know that I'm going to stop him.
Go for it.
Queue up. On YouTube. Yeah.
It's an odd thing. There are a couple of other things that are worth a quick mention before we go. there was an interesting article. It's kind of highbrow, really, for us, I think, on who owns the Bible. It was in the Times of Israel. It was about the American Bible Society, and they lashed out a load of money and bought the right to use .bible at the end, like we'd have .org or .net or .com.
Yeah, yeah.
They now own .bible. So before they put this offer in, they said, we'll allow any scholarly academics that are interested in the realms of Bible or literature related to it and theology to use this. And then since they had it, they closed all the doors and they said, only if we agree, and it goes by our standards of what a fair use is, can you use it? And they started to reduce it to just Christian and just Protestant Christian, and then just Protestant Christian, which walk in the same circles as we do. And even cutting out the use for, say, Jehovah's Witnesses or Jewish sources. And that caused this huge backlash. And then they kind of recanted some of that stuff. So now they're willing to say, oh, if you're Jewish and we believe that you do good work, then you can use it. But it brought up an interesting question about the word Bible for me and the fact that sometimes I think we're a bit scared to use it. So I'll find myself maybe cheering the word Tanakh in certain groups on Facebook because I don't want to be confused when I put the word Bible down. But then after, I get frustrated with myself because that was there first. So why should I feel I can't use the word? I think that maybe we're a little bit scared of using the word Bible because it seems to have been so kept and protected by Christian groups.
Mm.
And when I was reading this, I was frustrated with myself for not being willing to use a word, which, I mean, we say the Hebrew Bible, like it's not the real Bible. And it absolutely is the first real Bible.
Yeah, so that's right. You know, it's funny. I remember going to a Christian outreach event just to throw a spanner in the works because I find it fun. And and I got into a conversation with an Anglican minister, and he started talking and you know, wanted to sort of debate a few things with me, which is always good. And I pulled out my trusty New King James Nelson Study Bible, right? And he said, oh, I see you've got the whole Bible there. And I said, well, not only do I have the whole Bible, I've got the New Testament tacked onto the end of this one. but that's the fact of the matter. And I agree. I mean, the Bible is, I mean, yeah, the Tanakh is the original. It was there first. But we feel the need to say Hebrew Bible to differentiate from what, you know, I mean, heaven forbid someone just should think we're talking about what Christians regard to be the whole Bible.
The thing for me is, if I say to somebody, God said this in the Bible, I'm going to be right, regardless of what they think. If they think I have a New Testament, my quote is still correct.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
It'll be found in it. So I think we should maybe start like snatching back that phrase, Bible, don't be ashamed, don't be frustrated. All right. If you're arguing from the Bible, then why not make it a book that they can open up at home rather than calling it something they don't really understand?
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right about that.
And separates them.
Yeah.
While we're talking about religious books, and I haven't mentioned this to you as in regards to including it in the program, but I'd like to.
Go on.
The Vatican has digitalized its much of its library, which is interesting because some of these books haven't come to light before. So everyone, the conspiracy theorists and other people, have said that the Vatican for a long time have been hoarding lots of not just religious documents, but supernatural and superstitious items and interesting things, you know, like things that are allegedly possessed or signs of exorcism and all cool stuff downstairs. But the library, they've actually
making
said,
of a great movie.
It would be, really would. So they've decided they're going to open up some of this stuff.
Yeah, except for the menorah. Give us back the menorah.
That's right.
Give it back.
Maybe one day. You never know. Mm. A couple of these things were a Hebrew version of the Book of Luke and John that people have been losing their shit over. Don't beep it. Just leave it as it is.
So what's happening? What's going on? So wait a minute. So there's they've digitalized a version of Luke and John. What's so significant about that? What's the deal?
Well, so a lot of people have been getting very excited about these two books. They're both on DLV, and you can go to digi.vatlib.it, and then they have a list of lots of things you can look at. And two of these books are Hebrew versions. The one I was looking at yesterday was the Hebrew version of Luke. And what's kind of interesting is that for a long time, people have said they don't exist.
That there can't be a translation of Christian books into Hebrew? People are saying that you can't have Hebrew translations of Greek books? They don't exist?
Well, I think part of the issue isn't that you can't have Hebrew translations of Greek books. It's more that people thinking that these are original versions.
People are thinking that this particular copy of Luke and John were originally in Hebrew and then somehow they were translated into Greek. Is that what people think?
Oh, and convenient. It's like, wow, we've finally found those copies of those books that everyone said didn't exist. And I encourage people to go and look at them.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, they're not old. They've got. They're bound.
Yeah.
They're pages of paper which are very nicely typescripted, which we would not have happened 2,000 years ago. They're bound with cord and string, which would not have happened 2,000 years ago. These aren't very old. When we look at kind of something that's 2,000 years old, these aren't them.
Mm.
If anything, these are copies from Greek into Hebrew for some reason.
Of course they are. Yeah. But even if they're not, let's just say that they find an entire let's say that they uncover an original entire New Testament in the order that we have them today, in its full entire everything in Hebrew, wearing a kippah and a tallit and tzitzit, everything, right? And it's there and it's circumcised and all of those ones, right? And there it is. Still doesn't change the content.
No,
it's not what language that it's written in that is necessarily the problem. It's the fact that it's utterly wrong.
It's still a pig.
If the pig is born with lipstick, doesn't mean that it's kosher. It's still a pig.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be happy for them to find an entire complete New Testament in Hebrew. It still has the same content. The language the language that it's written in is not the problem. It's the content, people. But I can understand how some people get very excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I get very annoyed when I see I shouldn't get so frustrated. But it's hard not to when you see people that are like, oh, praise the Lord, this has finally come to air and it's been hidden for... It hasn't been hidden, it's just that hasn't been made public.
Right.
It's not like it was a secret, it was there, it just wasn't documented. I mean, Oxford and Cambridge, I think they're still going through their book collections and trying to get them online. And this is one of those things that just never came up. Yeah. I'm sure the Pope and himself wasn't aware that it was there.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, you know, when you see something online, don't just assume that it's the answer to all your problems. It very rarely is, especially on Facebook. And go and have a look. And if it looks, if it doesn't look legit, then it isn't. If it's marked tastes like pork, means it's not pork, and you shouldn't eat it anyway. That's my takeaway from that.
That's funny. No, I suppose people who that appeals to are the people who, I mean, it's interesting because there's another article, which we probably don't have time to go into right now, The New Judaizers. It's in the J Post, and this was on the 10th of March, and it talks about the appropriation and adoption of Jewish symbols, practices, and rituals among growing segments of American Christians. And and how that's, you know, kind of pretty offensive to Jews in general, and actually offensive to many Christians too, because some Christians will say, you know, Christianity came out of Judaism, it morphed out of Judaism. We're not going back into Judaism. Why are we Judaizing? And Jews are saying, why are you taking your New Testament and then trying to give it a Jewish veneer? Leave us alone. You've got your own thing. Stop being so silly. And it's kind of generally distasteful, you know, on both sides. But people who suffer from some sort of identity crisis, they want to be Jewish. They read their New Testament. They go, oh, Jesus was Jewish. His disciples were Jewish. You know, there is some, you know, a lot of the Tanakh is in the New Testament, quoted for right or wrong, whether in context or out. And so they feel like they need to kosher their faith. And I suppose if they find some translations of some of their New Testament books that are in Hebrew, that's going to give them warm and fuzzies, and they don't want to hear anything else. People like that really aren't interested in the content, well, in the content, in as much as does it fit with you, as you say, with the Bible. But if one was so inclined to market that sensationalism that people in that category that I just described so crave, so desire, it's quite a lucrative market. I'm just going to say it. I couldn't do that. I have way too much integrity. I couldn't possibly do that, and I know that you couldn't either. But there are people that do. There are absolutely people who do cater to that sensationalism, and it is a lucrative market.
It's like being a vegetarian butcher.
Okay.
You know, you're not willing to eat it, but
You'll dish it out.
You'll dish it out if the money keeps coming in.
That's it. There it is. Now, speaking of the Pope, all right, speaking of the Vatican, I don't think, maybe you put this on our secret society. Pope Francis wants to change the Lord's Prayer because Jesus was wrong. Right, so what he has here is that the Pope says that, you know, in Italian, you know, all good, but in the English translation, not so much. The much recited prayer, followers of the faith call on God to, quote, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Speaking to Italian broadcasters, the Pope argued this was incorrect. He said, this is not a good translation because it speaks of a God who induces temptation. Hasn't he read? Now, I just want to go to Deuteronomy chapter 13. All right, we come here a lot. It says, you know, starting from verse 1, if there arises among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass, of which he has spoken, saying, let us go after other gods, which you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for, and this is it, the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. You shall walk after the Lord your God and keep his commandments and so on and so forth. It sounds like God does test us, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think he may have had a change of mind on that, because I know after that story came out, there were a few other stories that he kind of doubled back and recanted and said that that's not what he meant. So,
well, it's not the first time that's happened, because also I saw floating around on Facebook the headline saying that the Pope denies that hell exists. Well, of course it doesn't exist, so he's right, but he didn't say that.
Yeah.
So I saw on Snoops, did the Vatican, did the Pope say that hell doesn't exist? I wish he would. Just come out of it. I mean, he built St. Peter's Basilica on, well, he didn't, I mean, the you know, Roman Catholicism built it on the fear of hell. and people buying indulgences and so on and so forth, and the Vatican and all the riches therein. Have you been in there, by the way?
I haven't been to the Vatican. It's one of the places I'd like to visit, but I'm torn because on the one hand, I don't want to increase their coffers, but on the other hand, it'd be an interesting thing to see.
It is.
Yeah, to get some education on.
It is a bit of an eye-opener. I have been there. So he didn't say that, but that was in the news as well. Hey, just talking about things you can eat and things you can't eat, being a vegetarian and being a butcher or you know, as we were talking about laboratory meat, whether it be pig or human or whatever, all that sort of stuff. Found out the other day, Victoria, where I live, right, the state of Victoria in Australia, there's no specific law saying that you can't eat cat or dog meat in Victoria.
Oh, there you go. That's your rodent problem sorted. You can go crazy on the cats.
I can open a dog and cat butchery, and I'm not going to eat it. But, you know, if there's a market there.
Yeah, queuing up. Hang on a minute. Praise the Lord. They finally found a way of eating cats and dogs. Brilliant. Right. And the great thing about cats and dogs is that everybody gets a leg around the table.
Now, the other one, this is just in a news article about, you know, some strange laws of do's and don'ts in Victoria. The other one is that you cannot name your child Satan or Christ. That's illegal, but you can eat cat and dog. It's kind of crazy world that we live in. Well, at least the state that I live in, Australia.
Sounds like the end of the world to me.
Yep.
It's nuts. Right.
It is nuts. Oh, yep.
Just one small thing. So I'm addicted to these kind of these programs on TV where they go and they buy old things for no money, and they upsell them. And one of the things this guy bought was a framed collection of these little wax body parts. There was a pair of, I know it looked very kind of rough, but there was a little leg. It looked like it came off a doll, but it didn't. It was carved out of wax and a little arm, and there was a tongue, and there was a pair of eyes. And I'm like, what the heck are those? They look really morbid. They look kind of cool in my,
because that's what you do when you bought it home. Get some wax and make a tongue. Yeah,
right. So it turns out that in certain parts of Europe, that's what the Catholics did. If they they prayed for something to be fixed, if they could pray that to be fixed, they'd go and get these things made, and they'd take it framed to the church and they'd put it up, and then it would be a sign that that prayer had worked, and other people would go and look at the thing and pray to the thing and hope it would work for them too. I'd never, it's not in Ireland, and that doesn't exist here. We do have ossuaries and things. We've got like St. Valentine's forearm is only a 10-minute walk away from me. But that is new to me, and it kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Let me get this right. So, I mean, because I've been traveling, as you have, traveling around Europe, and I have been into cathedrals, old cathedrals, where there are body parts on display, and they say, "Oh, this is the holy saint, such and such's eyelid or his little toe or whatever it is." Therefore, we've got magical powers here, and it's all good. What are you saying about these wax imitations?
So supposing you'd suffered from a really bad leg for 20 years, you were a cripple, and then one Sunday you go to church, and then you walk home on your sticks, and suddenly it feels better.
Yeah.
And you think there must have been a miracle happening in that church. So you go to your local artist and say, "I want you to make a little leg out of wax," and then you get it boxed up and framed, and then you take it back to your church and you put it up on behind the altar as a token to say that this miracle happened here.
So do you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of the story. So when the Ark of the Covenant was captured by the Philistines, and then they suffered hemorrhoids, I think, and what was the other thing? Rats. Eventually, it was so bad that they sent it back to the Israelites on a cart with golden rats and golden hemorrhoids. Don't want to know what that looks like. But depictions of their own curse, if you like, or of their own plagues. And they sent it, literally, take it away from us. Here's your Ark of the Covenant back. And with that goes the plague, and so it was. Interesting.
I thought it was interesting. That whole idea of... I mean, because being in Ireland, I'm surrounded by churches, and I have to say, I know that there's a certain school of thought that says you shouldn't even look at those things, but some of them are amazing. Architecturally, they're beautiful. You can't... the craftsmanship and the stained glass.
Yeah, that's right. Everything architecturally, that's right. I find it really interesting as well. You know, architecturally, it's fascinating stuff, and... Now, before we go, by the way, this is the last thing, so I've got to go. An amateur, remember we were talking about Mad Mike, right? He was going to shoot himself into the air to see whether or not the Earth was round or flat, right? Because he's a flat earther. He was not going to go, no one expected him to go high enough to see if there was actual curvature on the Earth. And yet, you know, he found a way to raise money to launch himself with his own rocket by appealing to the flat earthers. They gave him heaps of money, and finally he did launch himself into the sky successfully and parachuted down, only sort of breaking his back and his nose. So,
and with, I don't know, reams of scientific study and conclusive proof. No?
No, none of that. Just broken back and a broken nose. Had to get an ambulance to take him away. But it was pretty impressive. I mean, you know, he did it all himself. He didn't go very high. I mean, how high did he go? He really didn't. It was 1,875 feet.
Not high enough.
You know, not high enough. He was never going to go high enough.
No.
You know, but, you know, at least his rocket took off and it was successful and the parachutes came out and put him back down on the ground. But, yeah. He was worse for wear after it.
Well, you know what they say, what goes a flat comes a flat. He should have known.
And with that, we've got to go. I'll probably be back next week. Let's see how we go.
Let us know what you think about eating fake pork. Is fake pork still pork? We're curious. Yeah,
or laboratory human meat. Cannibalizing laboratory. I mean, look, Catholics, you know, eat Jesus every week. Why not? I mean, come on. Oh, yeah, you know, how about that? If you could actually... Well, no, we're going too far. We're running out of time. Got to go. We'll be back this time next week. Hope you can join us again. Till then, catch you later.